from WXXI News. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in classrooms across the city of New Orleans when state officials took over the school system for a major overhaul. In the 10 years after the devastation of Hurricane Katrina, 7,000 teachers were dismissed, the state turned almost all schools into charters, and more than 9 in 10 public school students attended those charter schools rather than traditional public schools. That's a higher proportion than any other city in our country. So was this move effective in boosting test scores and graduation rates? According to the Washington Post, math and reading scores increased, and in 2015, the city's high school graduation rate was 73%, compared to 54% in 2004. But teacher turnover nearly doubled, the diversity of staffs decreased, and in 2015, one-third of principals reported that they do cherry-pick students to improve their performance metrics, even though the new choice system was supposed to guarantee equal access. Plus, many of the new charter schools were essentially religious schools, where teachers denied the facts of evolution and school leaders believed the setup was a chance to basically end the separation of religion and academic instruction. Then there's the financial impact. With all these new charter schools, funding originally designated to public schools can be diverted to the charter system, they say, at least in a new film that we just saw and you got the chance to see coming up here. And take a look at Philadelphia as another place where they underwent sweeping reforms. What could creating more charters mean for a place like Philadelphia? The film explores that. What about Rochester? The documentary is called Backpack Full of Cash. It takes a look at these issues, and it will be screened at the Little Theater later this month. We're previewing the film this hour, and we're talking about how to create schools that work well for all students. Let me go ahead and welcome our guests for the hour. Shaughi Tell is here, Associate Professor of Education at Nazareth College. Shaughi, welcome back to the program.
Good to be with you.
Dina Swanson is here, Associate Professor of Counseling and Human Development at the Warner School of Education at the University of Rochester. Dina, welcome to you.
Thank you.
And Anna Hall is the Chief Operating Officer for Uncommon Schools in Boston, Troy, and here in Rochester. And in Rochester, Anna, that means Rochester Prep Schools, right?
That's right.
How many schools?
We have 6 schools here in Rochester serving over 2,000 students.
Okay. We've got an event coming up Thursday, November 30th, 6:30 p.m. So you can see the film Backpack Full of Cash. That's two Thursdays from now, right at the end of this month, 1 week after Thanksgiving, 6:30 p.m. at the Little. And then there's going to be a panel discussion following that screening. Shaughi, you're going to be on that panel. And I want to ask you, first and foremost, you know, when we talk charter schools now, it's an emotional issue. It touches a nerve for a lot of people, and I know we're going to have phone calls here. I always just try to be the guy who knows nothing about charters, and I just want to learn. I know you've had a lot to say in the past on this.
Sure.
How do you view the issue of charter schools now here in Rochester and how they fit in a public education system?
Okay. I guess one way I would begin by answering that question is I've been researching charter schools for a number of years. Came out with a book last year, and
it's called The Charter School Report Card.
That's right. And one of the things I've noticed about the so-called great charter school debate and charter school discourse, and when people talk about charter schools, as far as I can tell, there is an amazing amount of confusion. There is tremendous confusion. There is misinformation. There is disinformation. And it's very hard to for people to actually sort out different aspects and different concepts related to charter schools. And so my take on charter schools is that as an education arrangement in the United States, there is no justification for the existence, let alone expansion of charter schools. Now, some might say, well, hey, public schools are failing, public schools are lousy, and therefore we need something better for parents, which they can choose from, and so on and so forth. But the problem with that approach is that it doesn't analyze why public schools are failing and the role that the state plays in mandating failure for public schools. So the reality is that every parent, every student in the United States should have access to a fully funded, high quality, excellent public school. Why is it that government doesn't take up its responsibility to guarantee that for people? So without that analysis and by setting schools up to fail and then demonizing them endlessly and discrediting them endlessly in the media, you set the stage for opinion that we need choices, we need alternatives. Enter charter schools as a so-called innovation that emerged 26 years and some months ago. And the record for charter schools so far on every dimension, based on what I've seen, is very unimpressive. I'm not talking about this charter school here or that charter school there or what's going on in this particular charter school or that particular charter school, nor do I focus my analysis on the intentions or motivations or psychology of the teachers who work in charter schools. I, as a sociologist and economist, look at charter schools as an education arrangement in the United States and ask the question, what does privatized education mean? What does marketized, corporatized, privatized education mean? And so I've discovered that there are a tremendous number of problems with the charter schools. And we can go through them.
Well, the film takes a look at some. Do you think that charter schools lessen or further inequality?
The research shows they increase segregation. Their enrollments are very selective. Many of them practice a very authoritarian, no excuses model towards student discipline. Their academic track record is very unimpressive overall. Many are for profit. Many are nonprofit, but walk, talk, and act like for-profits. And so overall, no matter what dimension you look at, whether it's teacher turnover, funding problems, selective enrollment, teaching or not teaching religion in a certain way, you can go down the whole list. There are a whole host of problems. I think the main source of confusion is, are they private or are they public schools?
And by the way, when Shaggy mentions that they have a sort of a zero-tolerance discipline policy, I think some of our listeners might say, good to that. I think what you're saying, tell me if I'm right, I interpret that to mean they have a stance on discipline, suspension, and expulsion that their other public school brethren that are not charters cannot do, and they can sort of weed out.
It's very important to appreciate that charter schools, excuse me, because charter means contract. Charter schools are contract schools. Contracts are the quintessential market category. And contract law is part of private law. This is why charter schools are classified as nonprofit and for-profit. So they are, despite what people say, they're actually privatized schools. Because they are privatized schools, a lot of constitutional due processes and legal statutes and civil rights laws don't apply to charter schools, let alone the way they apply to public schools. And because charter schools are deregulated schools or so-called rules-free schools, then they can enact suspension and expulsion policies that are much different than the ones in public schools. And the research shows that charter schools do definitely, across the board, expel and suspend students at much higher rates than public schools.
All right, there's a lot there and a lot more to go through. Let me ask Dina Swanson for your thoughts, broadly speaking, on charters. Go ahead, Dina.
One of the main issues that I raise with respect to charter schools is not so much whether they're charter, whether they're private schools or public schools. I think many times when parents decide to place their child in a charter school, they're aware that it's not a private school. So don't know that they necessarily are misinformed about that. But one of the things that I am clear about from the work I do is that parents are not as interested in the debate around institutions. They're interested in what their child needs. And so I appreciate my colleague's framework with respect to how schools have been set up to fail and have been demonized. And so the narrative around the schools is that the schools are failing without an understanding of why they're failing. But parents, again, aren't looking at why schools are not failing. What they're looking at is how is it supporting their child. And so they will move their children based on where they think their child's going to get or their children are going to get what they perceive to be the best type of experience, schooling experience, and overall educational opportunities. And so it's not to demonize charter schools nor traditional schools, but recognizing that parents are not a part of the institutionalized debate. They're more interested in what's happening and relevant for their child.
Okay. Anna, you've heard a lot there as COO for Uncommon Schools in Boston, Rochester, and Troy. Where do you want to start? I mean, do you feel like we're fairly characterizing charter schools?
Well, I think the place that we can start is that everyone here agrees that all kids deserve an excellent education. And I would agree with Dina that the challenge is that parents have to deal with the status quo. They don't deal in generalities. They don't deal with national statistics. They deal with the options that they have in front of them on a daily basis, and they have to do the best that they can for their kids as the experts on their children. And sometimes that's in the context of a pretty limited set of options or of information. And I think in that context, charter schools offer parents, in particular parents who don't have the opportunity to make a choice by spending $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 a year to choose the school that they believe is best for their kids.
Okay, so let's talk about what happens then. So I think what you're talking about, because the film raises the question, well, why aren't there charter schools in suburbs? We kind of know, right? I mean, that sort of asks and answers itself,
yeah.
Doesn't it? I mean, but so Anna, let's talk about what you mean by that, because when you talk about parents who might not have the resources to spend $10,000, $20,000, you know, independent schools, private schools in our area are in that range, so if parents can't do that, but they want a choice. What happens? Let's say you've got, a part of an urban district, and maybe there's 300 families, and maybe 30 of those families are in that category where they can't afford it, but they really want a better education, they want a choice, and they choose to get in the lottery for their kids in a charter school system. What happens to the other 270 families, kids from often single-parent homes, families that may be struggling? And I don't want to demonize families, by the way, here, but I'm just observing those 30 out of 300, let's just say, that put their kids in the lottery are really involved, and they're really observant, and they have enough time to kind of to get started with that. What happens to the kids who don't end up in that lottery, don't end up going to charters, and then are still in a school system that you said may be struggling? What happens to them?
I think that's an excellent question, and that's where I would say charter schools have never promised to be the entire solution to education or even to urban education, but we are a part of it. We believe that we are a part of it. And I would ask, I think that the opportunity here is for the city of Rochester to engage in exactly that conversation.
Sure. And I think what I'm asking is, if there's 300 kids, and this is just a thought experiment, in a school district, and you take out 30 in families that are with it enough and involved enough and care enough to put their kids in a lottery, are you making education better for 30 and worse for 270? In other words, are you making it a net worse situation by the existence of charter schools?
I think that claim would premise that the entire value of an individual classroom, an individual teacher, or of a district is entirely on the basis of parent engagement, parent involvement. And certainly, parent engagement and parent involvement is incredibly integral to student success in any circumstances. But I would also say that there are districts that are relatively more successful, even in environments where parent engagement might be difficult or might not be as present. I also don't think it's fair to ask or imply that the parents of those 30 kids who are attending another school should sacrifice what they believe is best for their kids for the sake of an ideal or the sake of the status quo or a system that can't survive without them.
I don't think it, let me bring in Duncan Kirkwood, who is the advocacy manager for Western New York for the Northeast Charter Schools Network. I think I've got the right title.
Yes, sir.
Nice to see you.
Thank you so much.
And I know you're on Facebook Live today, so if you're on Duncan's Facebook Live, hi there. thanks for taking the time. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what you do?
Yeah, so the Northeast Charter Schools Network, we're the membership and advocacy organization for charter schools across New York and Connecticut. I specifically focus on Buffalo and Rochester, so Western New York charter schools, and we help to advocate for our charters and help to make them the best versions of themselves and also fight for fair funding. Which actually brings us to, you know, the point that you brought up about in this thought experiment, if the 30 kids leave, does that make it worse for everyone else? Well, in Rochester, charter school students only get 68 cents for every dollar that a district student gets. The rest of that dollar stays in the district. So the district is actually getting money for students they are not educating. So that's number one. So it doesn't hurt them because students are leaving. Because it's the same logic would be if 30 kids homeschooled, 30 kids went to private school, 30 kids left the city of Rochester to go to a suburban school district, the money follows them out. So in all those cases, the money follows those kids out, but nobody has a problem with that. White flight, that's all right. Homeschooling, that's cool. Private school, that's cool.
I don't think it's all right.
But when we talk about low-income families having an option, when we talk about low-income parents who can no longer be herded into forced classrooms, now there's an issue. Now we got to have this big debate about should they have a choice or should they not have a choice. When, let's be honest, most people in this room not going to send their kids to a failing, underperforming school with a 40% graduation rate. Would you send your kid to that school?
So this is about advocating for families, especially families who are potentially struggling struggling economically to have more of a choice.
Well, not just those families, but any family that thinks they want to do what's best for their child, we feel like they should have that option. So if you're affluent, you can afford to move to Greece, or you can afford to move where there's great schools or pay for private school, that's great. We're saying everyone should have access to those high-quality choices. Everyone should have a choice. And listen, Rochester City Schools are struggling, and they have been for decades, right? So to act like, you know, somehow we're destroying this beautiful system where all kids are learning and achieving and growing by giving parents an option and not making them prisoners and victims of their zip code, that's just ridiculous. Like, the reason charters exist is because of social justice fighters. It's because of activists saying, you're making our kids go to schools, to sending them to prison, right? They're ending up dead or in a cage. So we need better options. We need something. And so charter schools aren't all perfect, right? They're not all KIPP. They're not all uncommon. Some are struggling, and that's part of the accountability, that if it's not working, right, we tried, it didn't work, and a school closes. People always send me these, like, Facebook links, like, oh, charter school in Detroit closes, Memphis charter school fails. I'm like, good. If it's not serving kids, it shouldn't be open. So we don't have another system where for 50 years, kids and families are going to schools that are broken.
All right, Shoggy, you want to respond to some of what you heard there? Again, Shoggy's the author of a book called The Charter School Report Card.
There's several things that keep coming up. There's a charter school organization that obviously they support charter schools. I think it's called Education Next. And their recent survey showed that support for charter schools compared to last year in the public has dropped 12%. The other thing is that charters often choose parents. It's not the other way around. The standard narrative is that a parent is fed up with a so-called failing school, then they look for a charter school. Usually the charter school has canvassed their house heavily or canvassed their neighborhood heavily and sort of seduced them into the school. And then they supposedly choose the charter school, but that actually ignores how selective enrollment works in charter schools and what the student profile is in most charter schools. Not to mention that their academic record for many, many charter schools, 3,000 of which have closed in the last 25 years, is quite poor. Yes, there are some high-performing charter schools, but even that analysis has to be taken with a grain of salt. So the idea that people should have choice, it's funny because choice and rights are not the same thing. Rights and choice are spelled differently, pronounced differently, and mean different things. And so if the government actually took up its social responsibility to fully fund public schools and provide the right to education with a guarantee in practice, you wouldn't have the need for all kinds of problematic choices for schools. But we see that the government is, especially in this neoliberal period, starving all the public sector of funding, setting up the public sector for failure, discrediting and demonizing public schools, and then saying, here's a better choice for you, go over here. The reality is, like many of my wonderful students in class, many of whom are actually teachers, many parents don't know about charter schools that much. Many of them don't know what they're really about. And that's why you have a high student turnover rate in charter schools. You have a high teacher turnover rate in charter schools. There was actually another poll survey that came out. It was in the AP, but it wasn't the AP that conducted it. And it showed what I've known for a long time is most of the population still doesn't know very much about charter schools. And I regularly hear people talking about charter schools in a very confused way. Are they private? Are they public? Are they public? Are they private? What are they? Now, when charter schools close regularly, this is extremely stressful for families. It's very disruptive. And the reason that they close all the time, or one of the reasons, there's many reasons, isn't just for even poor academic performance, but it's for organized fraud and racketeering. It's for financial malfeasance. It's for embezzlement. It's for illegal or borderline illegal third-party transactions and that sort of thing.
You're painting a pretty nefarious picture here, Shoggy, so let me just push on 2 points here.
Yeah.
Number one, on the money side. I'm going to get back to some of what you just said in a second. But Duncan's making the point, and I've heard this before in Rochester, the charter schools get 68 cents on the dollar to public schools here. So the film, A Backpack Full of Cash, when it went to Philadelphia, is looking at a very different sort of a scenario where the charter schools there look like temples compared to struggling public schools there. There's clearly a lot more money in the system. Here they're saying, we got 68 cents on the dollar. If anything, if there's parity, we need more funding to get to parity with public schools. Do you agree with that?
No, I don't. Here's a couple of things going on. If you accept the assumption that charter schools are privatized schools and that they are contract schools and that therefore they are part of private law, not public law, then my argument is that public funds belong to the public. Public assets and public facilities and public enterprises belong to the public, not someone else.
And so who's going to fund the charter schools then?
Well, I don't know. I know that people have said, one of the ways they framed it is like this. If you want charter schools, sure, fine, go ahead, have charter schools, but no public money for privatized arrangements. So you already have a system of private schools in the United States going back 100 years, and they generally don't rely on public funds, let alone in a big way. So if you accept that charter schools are not political subdivisions of the state, that they are not state agencies, that they are not public agencies, and that by definition they are part of private law, and that they are privatized arrangements, and that they are part of the so-called free market, then you can make the argument, you can defend the argument that public funds and public enterprises and public assets and public resources should not go to them. Now, Gary Miron, a top researcher on charter schools in the United States, he's not the only one. Bruce Baker at Rutgers University has analyzed the same. Charter schools do get less money than public schools almost across the board, and it varies. And that's partly because of their awkward public-private character. And that they provide far fewer services, far fewer resources. Many don't have dining facilities. Many don't have sports programs. Many don't have a lot of the programs and the services and the resources of regular public schools.
All right, so what's the point? That when you talk about, you know, your concern about racketeering, I mean, do you think the people behind charter schools in the macro, I mean, Shoggy is not saying individual teachers or administrators are sort of involved in these nefarious activities. There's a lot of great, I know some people who teach at charter schools. I know some wonderful people.
Sure.
And I'm sure you do too. But you're painting kind of a dark picture. So whether it's the Bloombergs or the Bill Gates or, you know, anybody who has supported these kinds of systems, do you not think that they at least view this intellectually, honestly, as a better way to do this? To say, okay, we don't have equality. Suburban districts are segregated from urban districts. They've got more resources. And until we fix all of that, let's create this charter system to at least give parents a choice and maybe some better schools. Do you not think they honestly believe that?
I don't know what they believe. I know Justin Murphy was in here with me, with you, about a year or two ago, and we were talking about a 10-12-page investigative report he did showing a lot of problematic arrangements in charter schools locally. And what I found in my research is that that's nationwide, and that, you know, the research shows, the news articles report, people are getting arrested all the time and people are engaged in, they call it, it's legal, but it's always sort of kind of not legal. And it's these third party transactions that take place and shell games are played with the nonprofit classification and the for-profit classification to maneuver around that.
So people are making money at the upper levels?
Absolutely.
And that's absolutely. That what you think it's about?
I know the research shows that a lot of people are making a lot of money using charter schools as that mechanism.
Okay. Anna, I want to let you respond. I know let Dina and Duncan weigh back in. Go ahead, Anna.
Apparently I might need to find another place to work because I'm certainly not being personally enriched in the way that Shoggy sounds like is possible in the work of charter schools. I would also point out, and thank you, Evan, to hosting us here in an awkward public-private partnership, which is a public radio station, and say that I think that those complex relationships, while they are complex, do not imply any greater sort of source or risk of bad behavior than public environments do. I think what I would also sort of ask back, this idea, I 100% agree that if schools were good, if all public schools were excellent, there would be no need of charter schools. And I personally will be very glad to be without a job on that day. What I would point out, however, is that since public education has been a public right in this country, that has almost never been true. And this is the problem, that in the history of the United States, public education was reserved for the very few for a very long time. And once it was available universally to everyone, that's when things started going very, very wrong. And so I would be 100% in favor of the Shangri-La that Shaggy is describing. But again, here and now in 2017, it doesn't exist.
Now, what about the criticism that I hear quite often that, you know, and you hear from someone like Diane Ravitch, who used to work for the Reagan administration and advocated very much for choice and for programs like charters, and now spends her career advocating against it, saying it's a mistake in so many ways. You'll see her in the film. One of her complaints, among many, is that these laboratories for schools are not really laboratories, that charters were created to say, hey, let's take some of the strictures off, let's experiment a little, let's try things differently, and when you find what works, we get to take those to the wider public school setting, and we get to apply those concepts. We get to take those ideas. But there are so many charter schools that don't that seem to have different rules entirely, whether it's discipline, academic structures, or otherwise, that public schools can't do. And if that is happening, then what is the, I would say, what is the point? I think what you're arguing, at least what I'm hearing, is part of the point is recognizing the inequality and giving families at least some chance to get their kids in a, quote, better school or a different school than would currently be available in their neighborhood. But it's not the kind of stuff that can apply district-wide in many cases. Is that wrong?
I would ask why not? Because I think I agree and have the utmost sympathy for district leaders. And we, Uncommon Schools and Rochester Prep, have as one of the three tenets of our organizational ethos to work with districts. Because we know firsthand the challenges that they face, and we don't believe that we are the full solution. Rochester Prep will never enroll 30,000 students in the city of Rochester, and so we desperately want to be part of a solution. And so the things that we do that we believe are the keys to our success are often very difficult for districts to implement, but they're difficult because of contractual arrangements that are governed by public law that in many cases, unfortunately, hamstring districts from making changes, in some cases, changes that they want to make at the, you know, even at the level of leadership. And I certainly do not want for a second to also fall into the trap of being painted as a charter advocate who is not also an advocate for great adult working conditions. We just believe that those two things are not in conflict.
Okay. All right. And then let me ask you very directly about one issue that comes up in the film that you hear on occasion, which is that charter schools either cherry-pick students who come in or can expel or, quote, get rid of students who are not performing so as to boost test scores. And one of the ways that the film presents as what that's happening in Philadelphia and New York is that that kids may not be expelled, but parents may be brought in to say, hey, look, we don't want to expel your child because that goes on their permanent record. You know what you should do? You should probably just move them to a different school. That way the expulsion's not on the record. They get a fresh start. They're out of here. Well, then it's not an expulsion, but you, quote, counsel kids out. And when you counsel them out, you take away the lowest performers, your test scores go up, but public schools can't do that. Does that happen?
Not in my personal experience. I will say that it is a complicated situation, and the beauty in many cases of smaller schools, and I'm not saying only charter schools, but even smaller districts, is the ability to deal with those individual situations on an individual basis. I will say that every district has an alternative track program where students go if they have sort of significant discipline and behavioral challenges. And in many cases, that is the equivalent of expulsion in the sense of the opportunities that they have, the programs that they participate in, and whether or not they're even ultimately eligible for graduation. So while charters are accused of counseling out, I would say, look at the graduation rate of some of the districts that struggle with these same sorts of behaviors, and the high dropout rate and the low graduation rate of some of the most at-risk students is not structurally different than the behavior that charter schools are being accused of.
Okay, and one more question, and then what we'll do is we'll turn to our other two guests, we'll start taking your phone calls, maybe I'll take a break at some point, this hour is flying by as we talk charters. And I hear Duncan's point, and I've heard it from a lot of people, that 68 cents on the dollar public funding, that
and no state building aid.
Okay, so
out of that 68 cent, they have to pay for the building in New York and outside of New York City,
which is an effort to dispel the notion that charters are, sort of, again, temples of public funding that other schools don't get. It's to say that's not the case. But if I'm a taxpayer, what if I were to say to you, hey, you can get a dollar for every dollar. I'd be willing to see that if you can more readily present ideas that can transfer to the other districts. Because you're sort of admitting here that a lot of these ideas can't necessarily transfer because of rigorous rules, some things that you think are a little bit too much of a straitjacket for public schools. And that's a policy issue that maybe goes above your and my heads, but that's still the case. So maybe we'll do public, you know, funding parity if we can get more of a chance to actually create a laboratory as opposed to just other better schools for kids for some.
I mean, we're in. Rochester Prep was really gratified to be one of the first schools in the state of New York to win a competitive grant from the State Education Department specifically to partner with the city school district. We've been doing that over the past 3 years with the goal of working with them to increase the number of diverse teachers across the city, not just for Rochester Prep, but also for the city school district. And I would just say I am endlessly gratified by the commitment, the talent, the persistence, and the perseverance of the leadership of the city school district and every person in it. They want exactly what we want. And in many cases, the unfortunate barrier are some of these technical rules, in many cases, things that they would do away with as quickly as we. And I would only just further add, you know, I agree and I appreciate Dustin noting the 68 cents on the dollar, but I would also be remiss if I didn't thank RCSD for providing Rochester Prep with hundreds of thousands of dollars a year worth of transportation, special education services, all of which they're required to do by law, but they do it as excellent, high-quality partners to us, and that isn't reflected in the 68 cents on the dollar. All of that said, I would also heavily advocate for even 1% of the facilities modernization spending, as he mentioned as well, that we don't receive any funding for buildings. And so it's very difficult structurally as an organization to have to buy, renovate, and maintain physical buildings on the operating dollar, which is not something that any other organization would be expected to do.
All right. Duncan and Dina, some brief comments. I got to get a break, then we'll go to the phones. But go ahead, Duncan. You want to address anything you heard? Go ahead.
Yeah, so much I want to address. So we talked about, he said, you know, she shouldn't have public dollars going to private entities. Well, the school system already does that. They contract out for special needs services. They contract out for alternative schools. There's already a pattern of doing that. Also, you talked about charters are choosing parents. Well, I'm a parent, and the charter didn't choose me. My child had her IEP violated weekly in a district school. Weekly. I met with the principal. I went through all the chains. I had to sue the school district, and they still could not stop pulling her one-to-one aid away that was mandated by law. So I moved her to a charter school. So I'm an actual parent. They didn't cherry-pick me or my kid. They took my special needs student because I was looking for an option. The next thing, I mean, it's just so much. You talked about why charters are closing and there's this type of, you know, fraud, mass fraud and stealing and stuff everywhere. Well, one of the things that anti-charter people do, anti-church people, is try to paint all charters with this broad brush. Like something happens in Texas, so all charters do it. Something happens in Mississippi, so that's what charter schools are about. But we don't do the same for district schools, right? When there's fraud at district schools, sexual harassment at district schools, bullying, gun violence, we don't say, oh, that's what all district schools do. But the narrative that they have, and back to your original point about things transferring to the district, that's what some districts do. We have allowed in New York anti-charter folks, teachers unions, to divide this sector. But in every place, they don't do that. So in Atlanta, the district and the charters work together. They do professional development together. They find best practices together. We've allowed this division to happen because here, people don't want to accept that Black kids can learn. Right. See, that's we got to get peel back all these layers. Right. And let's get to what we really talk about. Can Black kids learn? OK, you're saying some people are saying, yes, we just have to give them these other opportunities and these ways to do it. And some people are saying, well, it's always going to be like this. We're just going to keep doing the same thing and we're going to get the same result. And I don't subscribe to that. I don't subscribe to this logic that we need to somehow continue to have a 48% graduation rate in Rochester. Right, we graduate less than half the kids in this city, and just pretend like, oh, but that's because we have charter schools and some parents have choices. No, we're doing a bad job of educating kids. And these are real people who love their kids. They're just because they didn't choose a charter or choose private doesn't mean they love them any less, doesn't mean they're less educated. They just may be on a wait list. That's why we have a 3,000 kid wait list in Rochester. Parents want better for their kids. And it doesn't mean the district has to be bad.
Or Duncan, I would add, or they chose the district.
Okay, but I think, to be fair, I think Duncan's checking a little bit of a straw man. I don't hear people saying black kids can't learn. Or, for the most part, I don't hear that. There's racism everywhere. I'm sure some people say that. But listen, I think what I hear more often for those who oppose charters is we have to fix poverty. Because poverty, anywhere there's pervasive, significant poverty, child poverty, severe poverty, you're going to have an impact on the kids who are going to school. Kids who are going to school hungry. Kids going to school without basic necessity. 2,000 plus homeless kids in the city of Rochester. And forget creating a school network that has some better schools and a lottery. You have to fix poverty. Right. And then, of course, they can learn.
Right.
Everyone
okay. So I respectfully disagree with the logic that poor kids can't learn.
But I don't think Evan's saying that.
No, I know he's not saying that, but the logic is I hear this a lot. And so I'm just kind of taking your train of thought to what others are saying, that because there's so much poverty, the kids are dealing with these external issues that they're going to fail in school.
Kids of all racial backgrounds. We happen to be a super segregated community, which has its own issues that we all need to probably look at.
Absolutely. Yes. And that's fair. What I'm saying is I don't agree. I think you can educate poor kids with all those external issues. It happens, and it's happening now in Rochester in some of our charters. So it's not that it can't be done. There has to be a political will to do it. So to provide some of those extra services and resources, to find the tools that work where schools are succeeding, right? And to break up the poverty. Like, if you want to talk about, you know, we need to fix this poverty issue, maybe it's not it's poverty. What we found in other places, it's the concentration of poverty. So maybe we need a countywide school system, right, where we take kids out. But now we talk about forced integration all over again, right? And that's really, you know, what we still are dealing with the effects of, the segregation, the forced integration, why they created magnet schools in the first place.
Yeah, and to Duncan's point there, even the biggest fans of what they do in like Wake County and other places who would love to do it here know there is not the political will to do that here. That's why there's Great Schools for All is talking about magnet schools or more magnet schools, but not a countywide system. Dina, I got to let you get a word in. We're way late for a break. Go ahead. There's a lot there.
Just wanted to be able to share that from what we're discussing, what we're understanding is that charter schools are not a panacea for the kinds of experiences and needs our children need, that need to be addressed. The public schools, our traditional public schools, have had to face a lot of challenges in educating our children. I actually do agree that while you may not have heard the narrative that black kids can't learn, the behavior that exists in schools reflect a perception and creates a context in which black children feel as though they're not expected to learn. And so while the narrative may be such that we don't hear people talking about it, the experience that parents and their children who are black and Latino have in the schools suggests that the parents aren't doing enough and the children aren't capable of doing more than what they're seeing in the school setting. The charter schools are varied. I think we have probably some strong charter schools in the Rochester area, but we also have nationally some really weak ones. And so acknowledging that they are not a panacea, they provide an option for some parents, but we need to do much more with respect to supporting our traditional schools, the teachers that are in them who are good, who do care about the students, and the parents who have their children in them who expect those teachers and the schools themselves to do better by their children.
All right, I got to get a break, and it's a short break, and we'll come back to your phone calls and comments for our guests. You just heard Dina Swanson, Associate Professor of Counseling and Human Development at the Warner School of Education at the University of Rochester. Duncan Kirkwood is here, and Duncan is Advocacy Manager for Western New York for the Northeast Charter Schools Network. Anna Hall is the COO for Uncommon Schools in Boston, Rochester, and Troy. And Shaggy Tell is an Associate Professor of Education at Nazareth Dartmouth College and the author of The Charter School Report Card. Coming up in two Thursdays from now, that's a week after Thanksgiving, at the Little Theater, November 30th, 6:30 p.m., there will be a panel discussion following the screening of a film called Backpack Full of Cash, and they're going to be discussing charter schools in places like New Orleans, Philadelphia, and it's not always apples to apples. I mean, Rochester is different in place to place, but it's a film that takes a look at some of the concerns about charter schools, and also they're going to have advocates there for charter schools and the panel as well. So there's a lot to get through here. Boy, the hour's flying. Let's get that break. We're right back to your calls next. I'm Evan Dawson. Monday on The Next Connections, as women across the country feel empowered to share their stories of abuse they've suffered, often in the workplace, sexual harassment and sexual abuse, we ask the question, what could derail the Me Too movement? A piece for The Daily Beast examines that question with a warning. We will discuss it and the road forward Monday on Connections. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Let's go to the phones. Judy in Penfield. Go ahead, Judy.
I was a teacher. I'm a retired teacher. Education was one of the things I'm still interested in because I think most of the education system is terrible. If you Google deliberately dumbing down with Charlotte Iserby, you'll see what's behind the education system. She was Secretary of Education under Reagan, saw the agenda of our government was outspoken. They fired her. She wrote a 700-page book. But she's still on the computer, and the Common Core, I think people should talk about that because kids are learning, you know, teachers have to teach for the test. With the charter school, my granddaughter goes to one in Phoenix, and it's called BASIS. And my daughter took her out of school in fourth grade because she wasn't learning much. And she's in debate clubs now. She was taking pre-calculus in eighth grade. She's in ninth grade now. She's learning so much more, and it's free. I think they do cost, New York City BASIS has a charge, but it's free in Phoenix, and she's learning so much more. So that's my experience with this particular charter school.
Judy, thanks for the phone call. Shragi, I'll start with you there. So there's an endorsement. There's someone who said, look, I've taught in public schools. I see waste, and I've seen better results in my family at a charter.
Yeah, I don't think that's the issue from my perspective. The issue from my perspective is what do charter schools as an education arrangement in the United States represent using the tools of political economy and sociology? Otherwise, what happens is you get stuck in the individual experience of every individual, and that's going to vary. So whether you're talking about public schools, charter schools, private schools, everyone's experience is very different or a little bit different. And so you're never going to win that debate.
And a debate of anecdotes, you mean?
Not even of anecdotes. Okay. It's because, oh, I had a good experience here, but I had a lousy experience there. Or the such and such was great there, but over here it was really lousy. That can go on and on forever because everything is so uneven, everything is so different, and so on and so forth.
But she was also a teacher and said saw waste in a system that really bothered her.
Well, let me put it this way. I think there's waste in every institution, every sector of our society. So I think that you're going to see waste in charter schools. You're going to see waste in public schools. You're going to see waste in the private sector. You do see it. I mean, anyone who watches the news hears about it all the time.
Okay. So in other words, it sounds like her experience, you can honor that. You can say it's valid, but it doesn't dent the larger issue to you, which is what?
The larger issue is, again, what do charter schools as an arrangement as an education arrangement represent in the United States. And if you look at it from the perspective of political economy and sociology and analyze the development of the neoliberal agenda and program in the late 1970s, it can easily be understood as a part of a larger privatization deregulation program. That moves you away from are parents good or are parents bad, or are charter schools good or are they bad, or that kind of micro discussion, or is the issue good teachers or bad teachers? So when you look at it from a 50,000 foot view, when you look at it from a broader political economy perspective, the analysis is different. The focus is different.
So do you have a book out against the military? You know, because the military contracts with civilian contractors with public dollars to do a service, right?
Well, hold on, Duncan. I think, so Shaggy, I'm not sure at a 50,000 foot level, I necessarily disagree with you. I would just challenge you to find the parent of a four-year-old today and ask them to take the 50,000-foot view when they have to know where their kid is going to school and that they have the choice between very different options with very different outcomes, very different supports.
And you only get one chance.
And to ask them to take that macro view. So at a level of academia, I'm not sure I disagree with you. I would just say the experience of education is necessarily anecdotal, and that we cannot get away from that.
My response to that is that looking at it from the parent perspective is a setup, in the sense that, of course, every parent wants the best for their child, and every parent should be empowered to make the best choice for their child. The question then becomes, why do parents feel like the school in their neighborhood, the public school in their neighborhood, is failing them? Then you have to go to an analysis of why is the state setting up these schools to fail, and then demonizing them, and then saying, oh, look,
You haven't defined why you say the state is setting them up to fail. Underfunding?
Sure. Oh my gosh. Chronic underfunding, high-stakes testing, racist policies, nonstop media demonization, discrediting public schools. And not just public schools, the public sector as such and public agencies as such. Because part of the neoliberal program launched in the late 1970s is to engage in neoliberal restructuring of the state and its public agencies and to place greater weight on the nonprofit and for-profit sector. So there's a whole analysis there. So the macro and the micro stories here, the macro and the micro levels, have to be married somehow in a sophisticated way where the hour-by-hour, day-by-day decisions of this parent or that parent are not seen as isolated or out of context or devoid of social relations and context, and that there is a larger picture here that frames what happens. As for, well, I want to get my kid out of this failing school, one reasonable question to ask is, given the broadly unimpressive record of charter schools, according to Credo, which heavily supports charter schools, why send your kid there? Now, one might say, well, my kid didn't take violin in public school, and now they take violin in a charter school. Again, I think focusing on the parent is a setup, because the parent should not be the focus, in the sense that the parent has every right to send their kid where they want to send their kid. At the same time, choice can only be choice if it's informed choice. We have some people who are informed. We have a lot of people who are not informed.
All right, let's get Duncan and Dean as well. Go ahead, Duncan.
Yes, a couple things. So you said, why would a parent make that choice to think a charter school is better? Well, in Rochester City Schools, the graduation rate is 48%. The charter school's graduation rate is 85%.
I would ask, though, what is the profile of the student body in these charter schools, which the research consistently shows they under-enroll overall? They under-enroll consistently.
Right. So find that research for locally, because I'm talking about here in Rochester.
Okay. It's available.
And if I could finish my statement, thanks. You talk about chronic underfunding of the public school system. In New York State, we spend more money per child than any state in this nation and most other countries in New York State right now. Okay. We spend almost $25,000 per child. Yet, we are 18th overall in our education system of educating children out of the other states in this country. So this idea that we just need more money will answer all our problems, is not based in logic, because we spend the most. So with that logic, we should have the best. But we don't, and we're not even close.
Duncan, we spend the most. We have the city with the highest concentrated poverty of its size in the country, though.
In
Rochester.
Right.
Highest level of severe poverty. I'm simply observing. So, if you want to throw numbers around, the reason we may be spending
I've been down to Selma, Alabama. Okay, I spent some time down there after college while I was serving in the military. And that is abject poverty like you've never seen. So, you know, it might be a higher concentration here because it's a city and Selma is like a large town.
Sure.
But guess what? They're educating their kids with $13,000 per child. And they're doing just as poorly as we are in Rochester, spending almost double with the same cost of living. So this, again, I'm not saying more resources wouldn't help. Yeah, let's give the school system, let's just keep giving the money. I'm all for that. More resources for our kids, more iPads, more learning. That's great. But let's not pretend that that alone is going to fix this problem. We have a serious issue. And then we talk about the film. Matt Damon is narrating this film. Matt Damon sends his kid to private schools. Matt Damon the person saying your kids should not have a choice and making a documentary is saying, I send my kids to private school and I tried to send them to the best private school in the city of New York City. So, you know, when I always talk to people about school choice, I say, are we talking about school choice for your own kids or for all kids?
That's a very interesting thing about Matt Damon. I did not know that. Dina, some final thoughts from you.
I appreciate the 50,000-foot view of this process, but want to remind us that it really is about what the students' experiences are. And I would love, I have always been a proponent for public schools. I appreciate the opportunities that are provided by charter schools for families to have these other options. But I also want to acknowledge that for those that don't do well, I appreciate the caller who shared her granddaughter's experience, but there are some that don't do well. And the implications for our children is that they are constantly then having to change schools. It creates an undue anxiety for them. And so the public school, the traditional school versus the charter school, at the end of the day, for me, I'm still looking at what is the experience and the impact it's having on our children. And so do we create further anxiety for them? Do we create greater opportunities for them? What, in essence, are we actually doing? And so for good schools, if they have the opportunity to get in them and to stay in them and to have the experience of being able to stay and have the continuity of that schooling experience, then they serve us well.
Some important things to take away from this. I mean, Duncan's right to say we need to look at nobody as being incapable of learning. Everyone should be viewed as equal and given that opportunity. Everybody wants equality in education, great schools everywhere you look. I think right now there's a difference of viewpoint about the current reality and what we do, and Anna Hall telling us, you know, maybe someday we don't need charter schools. The view is right now, from their perspective, we do. Shaggy Tell's concern is that we need to look at different systems and structures and understand the root of why we got here in the first place. So a lot of different viewpoints. I think everyone wants what's best for kids, and the discussion is going to continue at The Little on Thursday night, November 30th at 6:30 p.m. A panel discussion will be there. Our thanks to all of our guests. Thank you for being here. Ending the week with a spirited conversation. We appreciate it. John Andrus, engineer, Megan Mack, producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a beautiful weekend. It's sunshining out there. We'll see you Monday.
All right.